side. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see not joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a toy, can't just see, open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Wednesday, March the 16th, 2022. You're listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope you are all doing well in whatever corner of the world you happen to be. I will apologize again ahead of time for the sound effects to which you will all be subjected to today. As I explained on my last program, one of my beloved sheep decided to use my face a few months ago for target practice. He didn't mean to do it. The sheep, when they get nervous and they feel like they're in danger, they leap. And it's amazing to see the strength that these animals have when they leap. And I was trying to run them out of a section of the barn where I keep the hay, and they were all crowded in there trying to, they had gotten in there when they shouldn't have and were eating the hay. And so I was running them out, and this little guy here, he was nervous because there were a bunch of sheep in front of him, and I was in front of him, and he thought maybe I was planning to put him on the spit for dinner, and he leapt and clocked me right in the side of the face with those horns. And so now, as I explained on the last program, folks, my sinuses run all the time as a result of this injury. So, and it's particularly bad this morning. And so for that reason, I am going to, as I said, I have to apologize ahead of time. I'll do my best to edit out the more egregious sound effects in that regard ahead of time, but unfortunately, this just comes with the territory, folks. Okay, so let's see. We are, first of all, again, thank you to those of you who did contact me after the last program and to say how much they enjoyed it. I was rather unimpressed with it, folks, as I am virtually all the programs that I do. I don't think that I was cut out to do this. I am a good talker, but I don't think I was really cut out to do radio per se. Just as I don't think that I don't consider myself to be a journalist. You know, Mike Piper, our beloved friend Mike Piper, may he rest in peace, and as Jonathan Azaziah said, may he be granted 1,000 kingdoms in paradise. I always got a kick out of that, still do. He would bristle when people would refer to him as an investigative journalist. And he would say, I'm not an investigative journalist. He said, I'm a hack writer with opinions, which I always found rather humorous because I thought that, well, as I've said before and as I will continue to say, I think that Mike was uniquely and singularly brilliant. I think he's the best thing that this alternative media movement, whatever you want to call this thing, I think he's the best thing that this movement ever produced. And so likewise, folks, that's kind of how I see myself. I am just a hack writer with opinions. It was never my lifelong dream to be a writer or to be a broadcaster or podcaster, whatever we want to call it. It's just something that I decided to do because 20 plus years ago, when this bloodbath took off in the Middle East, the worsening of the already existing bloodbath, I felt that it was my duty to humanity to add my two cents, and especially since so many other people didn't seem to get what I considered at that time to be very basic concepts. And so, anyway, those of you who have contacted me and said that they enjoyed last week's program, thank you. I'm glad that it resonated with you. And we hope and pray that this one will as well. So, folks, a lot has happened since we were last together. I just got off the phone with my friend. You heard him years and years ago when I was doing the program. Paulie from Alaska, we just got off the phone and had a very interesting conversation, as we always do. And he said, you know, it doesn't seem like it's going away. And I said, no, it's not. And I said, I'm betting on this thing just getting worse and worse and worse. And during the course of our conversation, he brought up, he said, well, it seems as though Biden doesn't want to go to war. It seems as though the Western countries of NATO don't want to go to war. And I said, well, yes, that's true. The appearance is that, in the same way that it was the appearance on the part of George H.W. Bush prior to Operation Desert Storm, I think that was the first one, he gave the appearance of not wanting to go to war, okay, even while he was building up the military forces in the Middle East and all the rest of that. He hinged all of this on Saddam Hussein pulling out of Kuwait and doing this and doing that, so that when he did initiate these military actions that were already baked into the cake, folks, that he could make the claim, well, you know, we did everything that we could. We went through all the proper legal and peaceful channels. We did sanctions and we did this and we did that. But doggone it, that doggone Saddam Hussein, he's just too hard-headed, and he's not going to understand anything except the use of force. And likewise with George H.W. Bush's retarded son, George W. Bush, okay, it was 2 years, a full 2 years after 9/11, before military actions were reintroduced. And during that time, you know, the stage was set. All of the theatrics and drama, and that's drama with a J, folks. I'll leave that up to you clever people to figure out why it's a J. All of the theatrics and drama and all the rest that took place, you know, weapons inspectors from the UN and UN resolutions and this and that and this and that and this and that. So that by the time George W. Bush decided to push the button and pull the trigger on what was one of the greatest satanic black masses that has taken place in human history, so that by the time it came around for that to take place, he could make the claim, well, doggone it, we did everything we could. We tried to do this peacefully, but that doggone Saddam Hussein and those Iraqis, you know, they just wouldn't listen to reason. And I would assume, I think it would be safe for us, prudent for us, wise for us to assume that a lot of the same protocols are being put into play, put into motion with regards to this, okay? So Biden says he's not going to go to war with Russia because it would start World War III. And he's not going to go to war against Russia for the sake of Ukraine. But at the same time, folks, let's remember that Biden also said, I won't go to war for Ukraine, but I will go to war for NATO. Okay. So he's on the hook for that. He's on the hook for that statement. And quite frankly, we are all on the hook for that by virtue of this thing known as Article 5 of the NATO Charter, which says that if one nation gets attacked, that all of them are obliged by virtue of this treaty to participate. Okay. And, you know, my good friend, Paul, and I, Paulie from Alaska, he said, why would they be willing to do this? And I said, Paul, you've heard of the game Russian roulette, where a person, and usually there's money involved. It's a bet, okay, you know, just like playing cards. And you've got a revolver and with six cylinders usually, and only one of the cylinders is loaded, okay? And you put the gun to your head and you pull the trigger, and if the gun doesn't go off, then you get the pile of cash in front of you. There are people who really do play that game. Why they do, who knows? Okay, there is, you know, the mystery of human psychology, and especially abnormal psychology, mental illness, why people do the crazy things that they do. There are just some people who love the rush of that to the point where they don't even stop and consider whether or not that chamber is going to come up loaded. And even worse, for situations like this, you think about World War I and World War II and all the other wars, at least here in America, that have been fought. None of the men who sent these young men off to die in these unnecessary wars, none of them ever paid a price for it. Woodrow Wilson, who promised, part of his campaign promise for being reelected, was that he wasn't going to send any American boys off to fight and die in a foreign war. And then after he got reelected, he indeed did exactly that. And he was championed for doing it, okay, because America won the war, and, you know, it greatly increased our standing in the world. He didn't pay a price for that, other than, you know, when he went to meet his maker. Likewise with FDR, who said, you know, we're not going to send any American boys off to fight and die in any European war in order to get reelected. And then as soon as he got reelected, that's exactly what he did. So, and it's important in both cases to remember that while they were talking, making, you know, talking the talk about not getting involved in these wars, they were walking the walk of being involved in them. They were sending arms and munitions and everything else, and at least in the case of World War I, this is what basically dragged the United States into that war. Because we were, the United States, we were sending in passenger vessels. We were sending ships from America loaded with munitions in the hull of the ship. These were cruise ships, carrying civilians, and the Germans found out that we were sending arms to England using these ships. And so they started sinking these ships, and it led to the deaths of American civilians, such as what took place with the Lusitania. And it's very important to remember as well that while FDR was talking the talk about not sending American boys off to fight and die in another European war, that he was putting sanctions on Japan, choking them off economically and industrially so that it would be believable, okay, that the attack on Pearl Harbor was a surprise. Okay. So Biden and the rest of the political class making these noises that they're not going to go to war against Russia because this would be World War III. Well, folks, I'm betting that we do. I'm betting that this thing, and even if in this one weird, weird impossibility of Biden and the rest of these crooks and liars, that they're telling the truth, okay, they really, really don't intend for this thing to blow up into a war, okay? And the Russians have already made clear that they are not interested in fighting World War III that could go nuclear, okay? There is one player in all of this who is absolutely, with 666% of its being dedicated to getting this war started. They've been waiting for this war for thousands and thousands of years. Okay? This one tiny, seemingly statistically insignificant group of people who are absolutely intent upon this war. So, players such as Biden and Blinken and Merkel and all of the others, Boris Johnson and Macron and all of the rest of them, maybe they don't want to go to war. Maybe they understand how crazy all of this is and how this could be the one time that, you know, the vultures did come home to roost for them personally. Okay, nevertheless, they are bringing all of the flammables to this soon-to-be bonfire. They're bringing the gasoline and the kerosene, and they're bringing fuel oil, and they're bringing old newspaper and cardboard and wood and all of this stuff, and they're piling it all up into this big mountain of flammable material. So maybe they don't plan to actually light the match and toss it on there. But that doesn't mean that somebody else won't. And, of course, that somebody else is that entity that has been waiting for this thing to happen for thousands of years. That's important to remember, folks, because in these various discussions that take place these days involving the children of Israel and the state of Israel and all of the rest of that stuff, Zionism and all the rest of that stuff, various experts, and I put that word in quotation marks, they have tried to paint this thing as something other than what it really is. You know, they make the argument that Zionism is a political thing and Judaism is a religious thing, and that Zionism just sprung up about a century ago, and these people aren't real Jews because real Judaism doesn't preach violence and the conquest of the promised land and all of the rest of that. And as we have tried to point out on the website for many, many years, folks, all of these statements, as nice as they sound, okay, these are just rat-poisoned lollipops. There's no truth to these statements at all. The Jewish state began thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago when this penniless nomad from Iraq named Abraham started hallucinating and hearing voices in his head telling him that there was this piece of property that had been promised to him and to his kin, and that they were justified in doing whatever was necessary in order to get their hands on that piece of real estate, because this was going to be the headquarters of God himself. And as we have pointed out millions of times on the website, folks, the various op-ed or the various EdNote commentaries that we have attached to various stories, it's right there in black and white. All you have to do is open up the most popular book in human history, which is the Bible, and within just the very first pages of reading this thing, you will see that the seeds of Armageddon, okay, were planted thousands and thousands of years ago, and they appear in black and white right there in that book. And so, bringing this thing back to the beginning here, with regards to whether or not Biden and the rest of these creatures intend to start World War III with the Russians is immaterial. It doesn't matter at all whether what their intentions are. There is a third player involved in all of this that absolutely intends to bring this thing about. And as they have demonstrated on instances far too numerous to recount here, they possess the willingness to do it, and they possess the capacity to do it, to get these wars started. And on that note, folks, I want to bring up an extremely important piece of information that I came across since we were last together. Those of you who have been following the website and who heard last week's program, as you know, it is my thesis, okay, that the reason for Vladimir Putin deciding at this time to engage in military actions in Ukraine is because through his network of intelligence analysts and agents and all the rest of it, that they got wind of what was the planned sabotage of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant. And as I explained in my thesis and as I've explained in the various stories that I've run on the website dealing with it, I think that the plan was, on the part of these saboteurs, is that they were going to affect an event at Chernobyl. It would have been blamed on what is an already fragile containment system, as I explained on the last program. After the Chernobyl disaster, they had to, and by they, I mean the Russians, it's a Russian plant, they had to build two domes over that reactor that blew up in order to contain the radiation. And both of these domes suffer from all sorts of very serious structural and systemic weaknesses. And they're only, it looks like they're only able to function for at best 100 years. So if going by the conventional wisdom on this, if that place is going to be radioactive for 20,000 years, what that means, and if these domes are only good for 100 years, what that means is that they're going to have to build these domes, rebuild these domes every, let's see, 200 times? 200 times they're going to have to do this. So this place is incredibly, incredibly dangerous, and will be for the next 20,000 years. Now, it is generally accepted that the straw that broke the back of the Soviet Union was Chernobyl. It's known as the nuclear theory of the fall of the Soviet Union, that it created so much political bad luck, political misfortune, political pressure, whatever you want to call it, that the already beleaguered Soviet system finally just collapsed under the weight of this horrible thing that happened. And it has been my theory, based upon things that I have seen since the beginning of hostilities in Ukraine, that this was what was planned. This is what this is why Zelensky was, the Ukrainian version of Jerry Seinfeld, why he, a member of the chosen race, one of the followers of Judaism, one of the children of Israel. This is the reason that he was chosen for this, okay, is that he, we'll get into why I think he was chosen for it in a bit. But suffice it to say, this was the plan, and the Russians got wind of it ahead of time, and this is the reason why they preempted this. Now, the one glitch in my theory is that, well, you know, radiation is very non-discriminatory, okay? It kills everybody. It kills, so this radiation being released, you know, it might make its way down to Israel. It might make its way over to the United States. So why would these people be willing to blow something up if they knew that it was going to poison them as well? Okay, well, that's certainly a very a valid question to raise. Why would Israel, why would they be willing to do this given their proximity to where it is and the fact that, clouds of radiation could make their way down there and make the people sick? Well, folks, I did a little bit of research and I came across some very, very interesting and important news stories that I did not know about ahead of time. Well, it turns out, folks, that just prior to COVID making its way onto the world stage, that Israel, of all places, pioneered two therapeutics for radiation poisoning. One of them is a vaccine that, at least in the test trials, proved to be 75% effective. And the other was a stem cell therapy treatment that achieved 100% recovery rates for people who used it. Now, the science behind it is that radiation poisoning, basically the way it kills you, at least, you know, low levels of it, is that it gets into your bone marrow where your blood, red blood cells are made, and it destroys your bone marrow, and without your red blood cells, then that's it. So the Israelis pioneered this stem cell treatment that would rejuvenate bone marrow in the event of a radiological event, and with 100% recovery. 100%. In fact, it was so successful that the U.S. Department of Defense decided to start buying up huge numbers of these therapeutics in case there was ever a radiological event. Now, very interestingly, on both of these stories that I found, and both of them appearing in the Hebraic press, folks, so this wasn't Mother Jones or any of the, it came right off the Jerusalem Post and Mariv and Ynet and all these other, you know, very, very important news outlets that are tied directly to the Israeli government. They were very specific in saying that these therapies would not be used in the event of a blast. You know, like, I mean, let's face it. I mean, if there's a nuclear war, okay, then that's it. It's not going to be the radiation that kills you. It's going to be the shock wave, the heat wave, whatever, okay? What they specifically said is that these therapies are to be used in the event of a quote-unquote dirty bomb attack by a dirty bomb, which is just a conventional explosive that is surrounded by nuclear material, radioactive material. So what it does is just it poisons the environment with radiation. So either an attack by a dirty bomb or, drum roll please, folks, a nuclear reactor that has either blown up or gone critical and is releasing radiation into the atmosphere, which is exactly what would have happened if Chernobyl had been sabotaged. And also, interestingly enough, the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said a few weeks ago that they had to go into Chernobyl. The Russians had to go into Chernobyl. The very first day, folks, keep that in mind. Chernobyl was taken within the first hours of military actions when they began. It was obviously the number one priority was to seize control of that plant. And Lavrov said, we had to move to secure Chernobyl because, quote unquote, they were building dirty bombs there. So I think, once again, we have found an extremely important piece of this puzzle, folks, in the fact that Israel, of all places, that they have pioneered, to my knowledge, the only ones who have done this, that they have pioneered a therapeutic that would save people in the event of a radiological event. Now, let's just step up to the next level here of the geopolitical implications that are associated with this. Okay, so let's see a show of hands here. Who wants to bet? Who wants to bet that part of the entire COVID thing, besides being concocted for the political reasons of getting a certain Donald J. Trump, who was pushing very hard for this peace deal between Israel and the rest of the people of the Middle East that would have confined Israel to boundaries which she considers to be far inferior to what her holy books and her religion tells her belongs to her. Okay, besides the obvious political reasons for concocting this COVID virus, as we brought up on last week's program, the media saturation during the whole COVID episode, which, by the way, folks, you notice it all disappeared as if it had never existed, disappeared just about 2 weeks before these military actions took place. Boom, nothing. All of a sudden, you have all these states that are going to drop their mask mandates and their lockdowns and all the rest of that. Boom, gone. And now, folks, as of today, COVID's back. Okay, lots of people in Hong Kong, I think it is, are dying from it. And there's a brand new variant that has just come out. So since their plans didn't work with Chernobyl, where COVID was going to be replaced with an even worse threat to our health, meaning radiation, and where we would have been subjected to, you know, breaking news bulletins every half hour, every 15 minutes, whatever, how many people have come down with radiation poisoning, how many have been tested positive, how many have been hospitalized, how many are dying. That's what would have happened if they had gone, if they had succeeded with what they were planning to do with Chernobyl. That's what would have happened, okay? So, besides that, folks, imagine the position that the Jewish state would have been in if Chernobyl had been pulled off the way that they had planned it, and you had millions and millions, maybe even billions of people who were, you know, whose very existence was threatened, and who has the cure for it? Who has the cure to keep everybody alive? Israel. Dear little Israel. And you know, folks, those therapies, even if they did the engaged in all of the drama, and that's drama with a J, and the theatrics of giving away the therapies for free. And notice, folks, something else, a thought that just occurred to me. I'm sorry, I'm bouncing around, just like I said on last week's program, I am now inclined to do. You know, when COVID was going on, who was the country? Which country was it that had all the answers in terms of the vaccines and everything else? If you listen to Hannity, if you listen to Sean Hannity, if you listen to Dan Bongino, if you listen to Glenn Beck, and even if you listened to the left-wing media, Israel. Israel has pioneered this. Israel has pioneered that. Israel's studies have shown this. So Israel's bona fides in coming up with therapeutics and vaccines that supposedly were effective against COVID-19, this was all a preparatory step to the next phase, which was going to be Israel's introduction of these therapeutics in the aftermath of a radiological event. Okay? Now, imagine the degree to which the entire world would have been held by its political grapes. You can figure out what I mean by that. That if Israel was the only one with the ability to save billions and billions of people around the world. Okay, obviously, the public relations aspect to this is obvious. Oh, God's chosen people, the children of Israel, the followers of Judaism. Look at, it wasn't a Christian country that came up with these therapeutics that saved the whole world. It wasn't Rome. It wasn't France. Wasn't Italy. Wasn't France. None of the Christian countries came up with this. It was God's chosen people. Not only that, behind the scenes, Israel would have told these various countries around the world, either you get out of the Middle East, you get out of our business, and you let us do what we came here to do, which is to create this thing known as Greater Israel, from the Nile to the Euphrates. Either you get out of our business, or you're not going to get this, you're not going to get these medicines to keep your people alive. That's what would have come from that, folks. So yes, you can read these stories on the website. I will include links to them on the program description here. But folks, this is very disturbing, in my opinion. One of the things that we covered on last week's program is the fact that, unfortunately, we're always having the wrong conversation. Or rather, the wrong conversation is always taking precedent. Okay. You know, throughout the whole COVID drama, and that's drama with a J, folks, and I'll leave it up to you to figure out why. Throughout the entire COVID drama, the discussion, besides the obvious breaking news reports, how many people have tested positive, how many hospitalizations, how many deaths, blah, blah, blah. Besides that, there was basically two conversations taking place. One of them was the pro-mask, pro-vaccine, pro-lockdown discussion. And the other one was the anti-mask, anti-lockdown, anti-vaccine discussion. Instead of, okay, the real conversation that should have been taking place is who did this? Who did this? Who had the means to do it? Who has a biological weapons program and could come up with something like this? Who has been engaged in creating specific viruses that target certain peoples of certain ethnic backgrounds? Okay. Isn't it funny, folks, that the top three countries in terms of deaths per capita have been the United States, Iran, and Italy. You have countries in Africa, you have third world countries like India, where if there was ever going to be an outbreak of something, that they would fare far worse because of their poor sanitation, because of unclean drinking water, all these health care problems. You would think that some of these third world countries would have been far worse affected than a country such as the United States, a modern first world country such as the U.S., a modern first world country such as Italy. And Iran, even though I wouldn't necessarily call it first world, having been there several times myself, I can tell you that you don't want to drink the water there. You don't want to drink the water unless you want to get really, really sick. So isn't it interesting that these three countries happen to get hit the hardest? And for those of you who haven't figured out where I'm going here, okay, the United States had to get hit the hardest with COVID because they needed big political earthquakes to take place, namely the removal of Donald Trump from the presidency before he could finish his peace deal. Secondly, Italy was hit as hard as it was because Italy is Rome, and the children of Israel, the followers of Judaism, have been nursing a 2,000-year hatred and vendetta against Rome for what happened with the destruction of Israel at the hands of Titus. And, of course, Iran got hit as hard as she did because Iran is Persia, and at this very moment right now, folks, It is Purim. It is the celebration of Purim, where the children of Israel all over the world, the followers of Judaism, get together and they put on masks and they get drunk to the point where they can't stand up. And they celebrate what they believe to be their ancestors having gone on a murderous rampage and engaged in the slaughter of 75,000 Persians. So, let's see, why was I going there with that? I'm trying to think back. Again, folks, I'm not quite as sharp as I was in years past. So, the therapeutics involved in this. Israel would have been in the position to dictate to everyone, stay out of our business, don't condemn us in the UN, don't tell us we can't expand our settlements. When we drop a bomb on a Palestinian home and kills everybody inside, no coverage, no official condemnation, nothing. If you don't do this, you're not going to get the therapeutics. Okay. Oh, yeah, so here's where I was going with it, folks. Who wants to bet that all those vaccines that were given in Israel for COVID, who wants to bet that those vaccines were actually to inoculate the people against what was the planned radiation that was going to be released with Chernobyl? Who wants to bet? I'm usually not a betting man, folks, because I normally don't have that kind of, disposable cash or whatever. But I would be willing to bet that there is a number somewhere that that indicates how many people were actually inoculated against radiation. Yeah, I would be willing to bet that. As I said, folks, I will put links to those two stories. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Here we go. Okay. The wrong conversation. Okay, so, expanding on that theme last week. We're still having the wrong conversation. And obviously, when I say we, I don't mean we here, okay? But the people of the world affected by all of this, especially now with all of the things taking place in Ukraine that could very, very quickly get out of hand and drag a lot of countries into this who possess nuclear weapons. We're still having the wrong conversation. You listen to mainstream media, whether it's right-wing or left-wing, you will not hear the discussion of NATO, NATO, you know, pushing its boundaries out to threaten the Russians, the Minsk Agreement, any of these things. What you'll hear is from both the right and the left that Vladimir Putin is a thug and he's a dictator, he's a tyrant, he's the new Hitler, he wants to take over the world. All the same noise that we heard after the Iraqis invaded Kuwait in 1990, at our instruction, folks. We instructed the Iraqis to do that, by the way, in case you didn't know. We instructed them to do it, and then when they did it, we had the pretext, the justifiable reason to invade their country and destroy it. All of the same things that we heard that roused the anger of the people back then to go into Iraq and whoop some ass, pardon my French, we're hearing the same thing now. Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, even Dan Bongino, who I started to like, okay, who I thought was cut from a little bit different cloth. Same thing. Something's got to be done. So these guys aren't lighting the match the way that they did, you know, with the destruction of Iraq, but they're bringing plenty of flammable material to this. Okay. And so, in effect, folks, we are seeing a replay of 9/11 and everything that happened after that with the destruction of Iraq, the clash of civilizations, okay? We're watching a total replay of it. Both the right wing and the left wing are united in this. If you listen, you know, you turn on, or if you were to read a transcript of one of Sean Hannity's programs or one of Dan Bongino's programs or Glenn Beck or NPR on the left, just a transcript so that you couldn't recognize the voice of the person, you wouldn't know who it came from because they're basically saying the same thing. So we're watching a repeat of 9/11 take place. You won't hear any of these people saying that the Russians are doing this because they have been pushed to do it. They have been pushed into a corner where the very existence of their country is at stake. What you'll hear is that Putin's only doing this because he's evil. He wants to take over the world. He's a tyrant. He's a thug. He's a new Hitler, blah, blah, blah. The wrong conversation. And I don't know what kind of conversation is taking place in the alternative media, folks, because I stopped paying attention to anything that came out of any alternative media source a long time ago. I mean, Sandy Hook, the whole debacle involving Sandy Hook really was a wake-up call that the alternative media, while it does have a few luminaries, a few gifted thinkers, in general, it's just as toxic, if not more toxic, than the mainstream media itself. Okay. So I don't know what's appearing out there in the quote-unquote alternative media. I hope that aspects of the right conversation are taking place, but I don't know. I don't know. And again, folks, I'm going to say this because it's very important. This was the reason why, years ago, yours truly and Mike Piper and a very, very small handful of other writers and broadcasters, podcasters, whatever, this was the reason why we expended as much energy as we did in trying to put down this whole Sandy Hook hoax business, okay? Because we said at the time that the danger associated with trafficking in these kinds of things is that it was going to destroy our credibility so that when more important things came along where people's attention was more focused and they were willing to listen to things that they weren't hearing on the quote-unquote mainstream media, that we wouldn't have any credibility with something much more important than simply, you know, the murder of a couple of dozen kids at an elementary school in Connecticut. As horrible as that was, I'm not downplaying the horrible nature of what took place, but compared to what we're facing now, possible nuclear war that could wipe out billions of people, you can see that just by comparison that there is a difference here. This was the reason why yours truly and Mike Piper and a few other people were trying to stomp this fire out before it got out of control. Because we knew that if it were allowed to get out of control, we would have no credibility. So that when events like this took place and we stepped in and said, no, the same people who are trying to, same people who got 9/11 and the war on terror going are the same people who are trying to get World War III going, we knew that we wouldn't have any credibility. And therefore, the official narrative that would be created for something like this, as we're seeing right now, would basically be swallowed whole hog. And it has, folks. I'm sure that many of you out there have friends and family members that you have tried to talk to about this business with Russia, and they're buying it. They're buying everything. But just like they did with 9/11, we got to get Saddam Hussein. We got to save the poor people of Kuwait, the poor people of Iraq who want freedom. Okay. You know, the same people that I thought that I was making progress with over these years and explaining to them why everything is so screwed up with our foreign policy. I've had conversations with them as of late where they're saying, yeah, we just got to get that guy Putin. We got to get him. We got to hang him and save those poor people in Ukraine and all the rest of it. As if everything I had said for 10, 15, 20 years that it never happened. It's just an amazing thing to behold. Amazing, folks. Okay, so now very quickly here, because we are approaching 1 hour. I'm hoping to get this done in 10 minutes, but I doubt it. So as I said earlier, folks, it is Purim, okay? It is Purim, and Jews all over the world, I'm sorry, the followers of Judaism. Now, very quickly, I'm just going to make a quick divergence and explain why. I don't want to use that word Jews anymore, because the word Jew has become totally toxified. When you say Jew, this program that kicks in the mind of the person hearing it, it automatically starts running these thought processes. Oh, this is a racist thing. This is as opposed to a follower of Judaism. Now, when you say a follower of Judaism, you're talking about a person who subscribes to a particular way of thinking, a particular religion, a particular philosophy, whatever. Okay, so it's not the DNA in that person. It's not whether his blood is red or green. It's not the color of his hair, the size of his nose, or anything like that. It is completely the philosophy and the thought processes that this person embraces and which drives that person's behavior. And that's why I refer to these people now as the followers of Judaism, whether they've got the pigtails hanging off the side of their head and the big stupid tractor tire, furry tractor tire thing that they wear, or the pancake on their head, or the beard with lice in it and all the rest of that, okay? Whether it's that kind of follower of Judaism, or whether it's somebody like a Sarah Silverman, or a Seth Rogen, or a Barbara Streisand, okay? People who aren't necessarily religious, they don't go to a synagogue and all the other, you know, the application of the 613 laws of Moses, but followers of Judaism in their hatred of all things Gentile. That is the thing that we have to come to understand. Just as a crocodile or a wolf or an alligator, just as they are strictly carnivores in their diet, okay, okay, by the same token, that when you talk about somebody who is a follower of Judaism, the essence of that religion basically boils down to, I think, as I said on the last program, a single duality. It's like a coin. On one side of the coin are all the rules and the regulations, and the worship down, I'm sorry, no. On one side of the coin is the love and the adoration of the tribe of Judah. And on the other side of that coin is the hatred of everybody who is not in that tribe. So the anti-Gentilism of these people is enough to qualify them as followers of Judaism. And this is the reason why I choose to utilize this kind of syntax, verbiage, language, whatever we want to call it, in describing these people. They're followers of Judaism. And since they insist upon, you know, a certain degree of genuflecting and adoration, the children of Israel, they love to call themselves the children of Israel. So fine, we'll call you the children of Israel, the followers of Judaism. So now, folks, at this very moment, millions of these people, millions of these creatures, these children of Israel, these followers of Judaism, they are engaged in this yearly celebration of Purim, where they recount how their ancestors in Persia went on the rampage and killed 75,000 Persian anti-Semites. So the story goes. Now, whether it really happened or not, folks, is immaterial. Probably it didn't, because as we have come to understand all too well about this particular pedigree of people, these followers of Judaism, these children of Israel, they are very, very creative in telling tall tales. Whether it's about, the God of the children of Israel creating all of these plagues and parting the Red Sea and, you know, all of this crazy stuff, okay? And by the way, folks, just a quick divergence. Zelensky, the Ukrainian president, who is one of the children of Israel, follower of Judaism, he addressed the U.S. Congress today, I think by Zoom. And he said, why aren't you helping us? We need weaponry. We need support. We need this. What he's really saying is we need you to send your sons and daughters over here to fight and die for us. Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. We are approaching Passover, where the children of Israel, the followers of Judaism, and unfortunately, hundreds of millions, maybe even billions of Christians will celebrate as well this thing, Passover, where they recount how Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, sent all of these plagues to destroy Egypt because he was harming the apple of his eye. Okay. And of course, this first got its start in the book of Genesis, and that's Genesis with a J, folks. I'll leave it up to you to figure out why. In the book of Genesis, particularly chapter 12, where this aforementioned penniless nomad named Abraham is hearing voices in his head telling him that he and his relatives have been given this piece of real estate between the Nile and the Euphrates rivers. And it says in that particular chapter, I will bless those who bless thee and curse those who curse thee. Now, folks, a practical question to ask at this point. Why does Zelensky, a follower of Judaism, one of the children of Israel, supposedly with a direct lineage back to Abraham, who was promised, I will bless those who bless thee and curse those who curse thee. Why haven't the Russians been cursed? Why haven't they been stopped? Where are all of these plagues that supposedly, we're told, fell upon Egypt that freed the children of Israel from that mean old wicked Pharaoh? Why does Zelensky need a bunch of goy Gentile Christian nations to send money, military equipment, and the blood of their young people? Why isn't Ukraine being saved simply by virtue of the fact that their president is one of the children of Israel, one of the apples of his eye, that I will bless those who bless thee and curse those who curse thee? Where's the curse? Where's the blessing? Where is it? I think these are fair, practical questions to raise at this point, particularly given the fact that as we sit here, second by second, we get closer and closer to possible nuclear war. Okay, now, swinging back, what is it that stupid press secretary says? I have to circling back, yeah, okay. So right now they are celebrating Purim, and I can assure you, folks, I can assure you that all of this business involving Russia and Ukraine happening right now, while they are celebrating Purim, that this was no coincidence. Okay, I think that the original plan was the Chernobyl disaster that was going to happen, and that everybody would be gripped with this terrible dread of justifiable dread of nuclear contamination of everything. Russia would be blamed. It would create so much political and domestic chaos and instability in Russia that they would be forced to withdraw from the Middle East, which I think is the primary reason for all of this taking place. The children of Israel, the followers of Judaism, they have to get the Russians out of the Middle East if they're going to move forward one more inch with their plans. And besides that, the Russians have made it clear that they intend to see the creation of a Palestinian state and to see this, the region stabilized. Okay. So the plan is to sabotage Chernobyl, create all this political instability, all of which, the blame for which would rest solely on Vladimir Putin's shoulders. He would be overthrown, okay, replaced with some puppet such as Boris Yeltsin or somebody like that. The Russians would be driven out of the Middle East. The children of Israel would be free to go on with their conquest and rampage that was begun thousands of years ago, first by Moses and then by Joshua and Saul and Samuel and David and all of the rest of them. Okay. And then, of course, the vaccines and the therapies, the therapeutics would have been given right around the time of Passover. Right around the time of Passover, and this would have just swelled the hearts of the entire world, especially the Christian world. Okay. Now, on a more focused note, folks, I will point to you or remind you of an event that took place about 4 years ago. Netanyahu, then prime minister, made a trip to Moscow to meet with Putin and to talk about, of course, the Middle East. And he went during Purim, either the run-up to Purim or immediately afterwards, where the children of Israel, the followers of Judaism, remember fondly and with great nostalgia how their ancestors went and murdered 75,000 Persians who didn't like them. So Netanyahu made this trip to Putin and was pressing Putin on the issue of Iran, okay, as Netanyahu has been doing for 40 years, how Iran has to be stopped. Iran is a state sponsor of terror. Iran's going to blow up the world with nuclear weapons and all the rest of this stuff. And Putin said something very interesting to Netanyahu that made it into the Hebrew press, but not very loudly. He said, listen, you're celebrating this Purim thing, okay, but you've got to get out of the past. The past is the past, and times have changed, things have changed, and it's not the same world that it was thousands of years ago. And then, and then Putin gave Netanyahu a quote-unquote gift for Purim, and it was a copy of the book, The Jewish Wars, written by the Jewish historian Josephus. Now, this in and of itself has got several very interesting things associated with it. First of all, this was a huge insult to Netanyahu to give him a book of this type. The followers of Judaism, the children of Israel, consider Josephus to be a traitor. Josephus was a fighter. He was one of the zealots who was fighting the Romans during the first Roman-Jewish war that Titus, the Roman emperor, who would be Roman emperor Titus, prosecuted. And Josephus was captured by the Romans, and they made a deal with him. They said, listen, you understand your people better than we do. You obviously understand their language. We don't. You understand how they, you know, how they have been trained and what kind of military tactics they engage in. We will let you live if you will serve as our translator and as an advisor. So Josephus did this, saved his neck. He did this. And then afterwards, he wrote this book, which all of you should have read by now. There are a lot of copies out there. Some of them are hard to read because they use very antiquated language in it. But there is a good one, and I will put a description of that when I load up the program today on the website. Josephus's book, The Jewish Wars, or The Wars of the Jews, depending on which version you get, the bottom line, at the end of it, when you read the whole thing, is that Josephus, and probably with a certain degree of cajoling on the part of the Romans who were paying for him to write this book, he basically says that the Jews got what they deserved. I'm sorry. The followers of Judaism, the children of Israel, that they got what they deserved for being stupid enough to think that they could fight a war against the most powerful empire in the world and that they could come out of it in one piece. So Josephus is viewed by his people as a traitor. And the only possible worse gift that Putin could have given Netanyahu would have been an autographed copy of Hitler's book Mein Kampf. So Putin giving this to Netanyahu and at the same time telling him it's a different world now. You have to get out of the past. You have to start living in the present. And then as a reminder to Netanyahu, what he was saying is, look, history repeats itself. You're in the process of doing what your ancestors did 2,000 years ago by picking a fight with the Roman Empire, and you're going to lose. You're going to lose, and you're going to lose big. And remember something else, folks. Putin considers Russia to be the third Rome, the third Roman Empire. That's the reason for the Russian coat of arms being the double-headed eagle, one facing east and one facing west. So, who wants to bet? Who wants to bet? Let's see a show of hands here. Who wants to bet that Netanyahu, even though he is not officially in the position of being Israel's prime minister, but as I've said, on various EdNote commentaries on the website, folks, this is just for show. Netanyahu is still running things, even though Bennett is out front. I think Netanyahu stepped down willingly from power. He helped create this momentum for his quote-unquote removal and replacement with Bennett because of everything that was going to be taking place right now. Netanyahu is the most powerful, probably the most powerful of all the prime ministers that they've ever had. And rest assured, the military, the intelligence services, all of them are loyal to him. Okay, so who wants to bet, folks, that this meeting that took place between Putin and Netanyahu, I think it was 2018, maybe 17. I'll have to look it up. Who wants to bet that this planned sabotage of Chernobyl and all of the rest of the business that was sure to follow, that this was Netanyahu's way of getting back at Putin and saying, you know, you gave me that book and you gave me that advice when we met, and I never forgot it. And by the way, F you. We just destroyed your country. We just drove you out of the Middle East. Who wants to bet that that was what, that to some degree, there's some page, maybe if it's not an entire chapter of this narrative, maybe it's just a page, that that particular thing, as well as Putin's stance with regards to the creation of a Palestinian state and, you know, a resolution of the instability in the Middle East, that that was part of it, and that to some degree Netanyahu would have gotten the message to Putin, hey, you thought that you were being the smart guy and the tough guy by giving me that book. Well, we just turned the tables on you with what just happened. Just a thought, folks. Okay, now listen. One more quick thing, and then I'm going to cut all of you loose because I've got tons of chores that need to be done here on the ranch. Years and years ago, I'm trying to pull up the story here. Here we go. Years and years ago, there was this op-ed that was written by this insane follower of Judaism named Nathan Pascoe, or Natan Pascoe. He is one of the children of Israel, lives in Israel. He writes for various Israel outlets, both on the right wing and on the left wing. And he bills himself as a Torah-following observant Jew. That's what he says, a Torah observant, an observant Torah following Jew, and as an expert on national security affairs. This is really dangerous, folks. When you have somebody who is an observant follower of Judaism, who follows the Torah and all of its commandments for war and genocide against Gentiles, and he has some type of status or standing in terms of being an expert on national security affairs. He wrote this very interesting piece in the aftermath of George Bush's genocide in the Middle East in 2003. And he wrote this op-ed entitled, "This War is for Us." Now, just a little bit of a primer for this. In the run-up to the war, you had people such as Pat Buchanan and other well-informed, well-resourced writers and commentators who were trying to tell the American people that this war in the Middle East was not being done for the reasons that we were told, and that this thing was going to come back to bite us in a really, really bad way. Well, naturally, the followers of Judaism, the children of Israel, doing what they do best, which is to screech and scream and holler and engage in all kinds of theatrics and drama with a J, they denounced Buchanan as a quote-unquote anti-Semite and a Jew hater and an Israel hater and an apologist for terrorism and for terrorists and one of Saddam Hussein's stooges and all of the rest of that. So this fellow named Nathan Pascoe wrote this piece entitled "This War is for Us." And he said, listen, these anti-Semites like Pat Buchanan who are saying that this war is being fought for the basis, on the basis of giving in to Israeli demands, and this is being fought for Israel, and all the neocons and all the rest of that stuff, you know, our reaction is to deny this and to say that it isn't for Israel. This is because they hate us for our freedom and all the rest of that. He said, but we need to embrace it because it's true. Okay, this war is being fought for us, meaning the Jewish people, the followers of Judaism, the children of Israel. This war is for us, and we didn't bring it about, okay? Yes, the neocons are real. Guys like Crystal and the Kagan brothers and the Cohens and the Rubens and the Krauthammers and all of, yes, they are. But really what it is that this is our God, Yahweh, okay, who has moved all of these props and all of this background scenery into place in order to get this war started, okay, that is going to benefit us. I'm just going to read some of this insane essay here, folks, in order to better illustrate the nature of the danger that we face by the people who embrace this kind of thinking. And he's not, you know, if you were to find an alligator or a crocodile who didn't particularly like meat. In fact, they were vegetarians. Okay, they don't like eating meat. They would rather sun themselves on the land eating grass alongside the gazelles and the deers and all of the other vegetarian animals. That would be an odd alligator. Okay, that would be an alligator that really was an oddity, to the point where it's like there's one in a billion of them. If you know, maybe the numbers are even more stark than that. Okay, most alligators, 99.999, probably 100% of them, folks. I don't know if there's ever been an alligator that didn't like meat. Okay, so likewise, when you are dealing with the followers of Judaism, even those who say, well, we don't like war, and we don't like territorial conquest, and we don't really believe in all of that stuff that our religion teaches, that we're supposed to go and slaughter everybody in order to steal their land and steal their resources. Okay. You may run into some of them who say this, folks. And maybe even some of them actually believe it. I doubt it. I doubt it. And the reason that I do is because even those who say, well, I'm against the killing of the Palestinians, but I'm 100% in favor of killing unborn children in the womb through the process of abortion. Okay, so... And this is pretty much a general rule across the board, is that the more left-leaning of the quote-unquote children of Israel who choose to live in Western Gentile countries, even though they may take a more balanced, rational, fair-minded approach to the Palestinian situation, and some of them maybe even they go and they protest out on the streets, you know, Palestinian lives matter, and blah, blah, blah. But you will also find them, after they get done with that protest, in favor of saving Palestinian lives, that they will be two blocks over at the march being hosted by Planned Parenthood or the National Abortion Rights Action League or National Organization of Women or whatever, holding up signs saying, "My body, my choice." Okay, getting back to Nathan Pascoe here, he is not an abnormality, folks. The things that he is writing out here in the open, to some degree, all the followers of Judaism feel this way. You know, I have read countless numbers of essays and op-eds penned by these people where they state very, very openly, I don't believe in God, and I don't keep kosher, but I believe that we are the chosen people. I believe that there's something special about us, something that's better. Can't tell you how many op-eds I have read exactly like that. So to some degree, Nathan Pascoe's words here, they do ring true across the board. Now, I'm just going to read some of these. And remember, folks, to some degree, what was planned with this business with Russia and with Ukraine, all of this taking place now, to some degree, there was an article that had already been written and would have been released if everything had had gone according to plan. Okay, with the destruction of Chernobyl. And it would have read exactly like this article. Now I want you to just listen carefully here, especially with the historical perspective of 20 years' time. He writes, "Of course this war against Iraq and Saddam Hussein is for us. We already knew this war for us, meaning the Jews and for Israel. Our sages throughout the ages have explained that the Torah, telling us that everything that happens in the world is for the benefit of the Jewish people. Simply put another way, if all the world is a stage, then the Jews, and especially those in the land of Israel, are the lead actors on the stage of history, and the goyim, meaning the Gentile nations, have merely supporting roles, while evildoers are props and background scenery. As our tradition states, God, the great playwright, created the world for the sake of the Jewish people, and it is our responsibility to implement the Torah, meaning absolute morality, and the blueprint of all creation in that world. Stop and think about it for a moment. The last Gulf War in 1991 ended just before Purim. This Gulf War began just after Purim. Read the Purim story in the Book of Esther again. It is a rags-to-riches story on a national scale. Haman, the prototypical anti-Semite, plans to mass murder the Jews and in the end pays with his life, as well as the life of his 10 sons, and all were hanged, and the Jews kill 75,800 members of the anti-Semitic Nazi party at that time. As I said earlier, of course this war is for the Jews and for Israel, and instead of us hiding from that accusation or crying anti-Semitic slur, we should gratefully acknowledge what the master of the universe is doing to our enemies for us. Saddam Hussein, Yasser Arafat, Bashar Assad, Osama bin Laden are the modern-day Hammonds and Hitlers. Great things are yet to come. Purim is a time for celebrating our salvation from enemies who plot our destruction." Well, folks, you know, our good friend Mike Piper, he always counseled me. He said, don't make predictions, because in 999 times that you're right, one time you'll be wrong, and everybody will remember the one time and they will forget about the 999. Well, my prediction, folks, is that an article of this type that has already been written, it's just waiting, it was waiting to be released, and what the children of Israel, the followers of Judaism, were hoping was going to be this multi-headed Hydra disaster, beginning with the sabotage of Chernobyl, that would have resulted in all of, you know, the whole COVID thing, all everything, all over again. Okay. And Russia would have been destabilized. Putin would have been dethroned. The Russians would have been forced to pull their forces and their influence out of Syria, out of all of these places in the Middle East where they are helping to keep the nation of alligators at bay. And then Israel would have brought forth its vaccine and its therapeutics to save mankind right in time for Passover. Okay. An article of this type was what was written. Now, there's one more thing I'm just going to throw out there as an interjection for you to consider. It's something I've been thinking about often as of late. You know, we Gentiles, whether we're Christians of whatever stripe, whether we're Muslims, whether, you know, whatever Gentile philosophy we embrace, where we believe in a higher power that expects us to behave in moral ways, and for which we will either be punished or rewarded based upon how well we do in that regard. The reason why our non-Gentile enemies have the advantage over us that they do, number one, they believe in a God that tells them to engage in violence and duplicity, theft, all of these other actions that have been deemed for thousands of years by every civilizational standard in history to be criminal acts. And folks, please, nobody sending me any emails saying, oh, no, murder and genocide and theft and despoilment, this isn't in the Old Testament. Yes, it is, folks. Yes, it is. Anybody who believes otherwise, anybody who says otherwise, anybody who writes otherwise is either a fool or a liar. This is very important because this is the reason why, as the minutes tick by, we are closer and closer and closer to possible nuclear Armageddon because of sometimes the deliberate and sometimes the non-deliberate belief that Judaism is a moral code. It's one of the world's great religions. No, it's not. No. Now, what these folks do, they have embraced this idea that the world is their oyster and all of the pearls in it belong to them. And, you know, if that oyster doesn't fall in their lap after being dropped by the hand of Yahweh out of the heavens and out of the sky, they go and they steal that oyster from a Gentile. And the way that they work it out is, well, if God didn't want me to have this, I wouldn't have succeeded in stealing it. Now, this is a very, very important protocol for us to understand, folks. They don't wait for these events to fall out of the sky like that silly story that appears in the book of Exodus of this angry God saying, "Let my people go," and he sends all these plagues and does all these miraculous things. That's not how it happens. That's not how they do it. How they do it is they blow some Palestinian kid's head off, and they say, well, obviously, that's what God wanted, because if God didn't want that to happen, the soldier wouldn't have had the gun, or the gun would have malfunctioned and not fired, or the bullet would have missed. When they drop a bomb deliberately on an apartment complex in Gaza with 1,000 people on it, and everybody's killed, they say this is what God wanted. And the way that they rationalize it in their mind is, well, if God didn't want this to happen, then the plane wouldn't have taken off, and when he went to release the bomb, it wouldn't have fallen off. Or if it had fallen off, the bomb wouldn't have detonated. So obviously this was what God wanted. This is what the God of Israel wanted, was for that bomb to fall on that building and to kill all of those people. Now, this is an important thing for us to understand when we study the psychopathology of these people. This is how they get things done. They take the text that says, go in and kill everybody because this is yours. And then, when they succeed in doing that, this in and of itself, the fact that they got away with doing it, is the reaffirmation of the original text telling them to go and do this. So they don't have, that's the miracle itself, is that they got away with doing it. And this is the reason why they're able to move forward as they have been for thousands of years in engaging in this kind of activity, and why to this day they are no closer to cleansing themselves of this bad behavior, why they keep doing it, and why the world as we know it, the world that we live in right now, folks, is falling apart as a result of their influence. And folks, let's not get into any discussions about their influence. I usually bring this up at the beginning of the program, but I'll go ahead and talk about it now. Go back and listen to those words at the beginning of the introduction here, where our author, who is a follower of Judaism, he is one of the children of Israel, and he's talking about Judaism being what? He doesn't talk about it being a therapy for the world. He doesn't talk about it being a medicine for the world. He doesn't talk about it being something that heals the world. He says it's a corrosive force, just like battery acid, folks, is a corrosive force. It's like the saline solution that the abortionist injects into the uterus of the pregnant mother that burns the child to death inside the womb of the mother. A corrosive force. And he doesn't say that Zionism is a corrosive force. He doesn't say Illuminism is a corrosive force. He doesn't say Freemasonry is a corrosive force. He doesn't say that, globalism is a corrosive force. He says Judaism is a corrosive force. And we are, we are the bringers of that corrosive force. So, are we going to figure all this out, folks, all 7 billion of us, Gentiles populating God's green earth, in order to avoid what appears to be written in stone? I don't think so, folks. I do this program basically for a handful of people. There are only a handful of people who are open to hearing the truth. Most people, folks, they are completely content to hear and to participate in the wrong conversation. The wrong conversation. And that is the reason. Whether it's COVID-19, whether it's the military invasion of Ukraine, whether it's 9/11, whether it's take your pick, any of these things, going all the way back to the beginning of the affair. Thousands of years, the wrong conversation is the reason why we find ourselves now staring into the abyss of our own annihilation. So that's it for today, folks. We shall see what develops. We shall see whether or not we are back together again in a week or so. Things are moving very quickly and exponentially faster and exponentially more dire as the minutes and the seconds pass, so there's no telling. As far as I'm concerned, like I said, I do this as a public service. Those of you with ears to hear, obviously, I hope that you benefit from it to some degree. I think that we bring a perspective here that is unique only in the sense that it's not really taking place to the degree that it should. But there's nothing, this isn't rocket science here, folks. This is very simple stuff. And hopefully we will get our own Easter miracle. And this message will take off like a virus. But in this case, it would be a healing, life-giving virus, and not the virus of Judaism that, as acting as the corrosive force that it is now intent upon destroying everything on God's green earth. That's it for today, folks. Go out and enjoy the day, whatever kind of day it happens to be for you, and whatever part of the world you happen to be living. And we'll see you next time.